This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
Welcome, everybody, to the Monday edition of the Orange Bloods podcast. I'm Jeff Ketchum, publisher, owner, writer, all kinds of things over at orangebloods.com. Most of you already know that. I want to thank the guys over at Texas Card House for being the sponsor of the Orange Bloods podcast. They are also sponsors of the War Room over at orangebloods.com and one of our dearest partners, I would think and say. If you haven't checked them out, go over to 183 in Anderson Mill. It's over in my neck of the woods in Austin. It's Austin and the state of Texas's premier poker club. Game 7 days a week, almost 24 hours a day. Recently, they've been catering so that you can go get your card on, which sounds a little bit like hard on. So let's just say get your poker on, which is almost, you know, I'm not even going to go down the road. The bottom line is, if you like playing cards and you got the itch, the Texas Card House can itch that itch for you, and they'll feed you at the same time. It is a great place. If you're into cards and that's your thing, you will dig the Texas Card House. You just got to go check them out. I give them my full endorsement as someone who's gone there and played numerous times. It's a dream come true. You don't have to go to Vegas to get your gamble on, to get your poker on, to get your competition on. So we thank them for their continued participation. So much to get into from the weekend. I was writing down a list of things that I wanted to touch on in today's podcast, from the weekend basketball, right? I mean, the Longhorns beat Oklahoma and Matthew McConaughey is there and he's the minister of culture, whatever that is. It's a good thing. You've got recruiting from the weekend. You've got so many things. There's a part of me that thinks that we probably need to talk about the Footwork King in this podcast and less about him specifically and more about, in very basic generalities, what it means to potentially be involved in a situation where access is sold for cash. So, but of all the things that we talk about today, I feel like we have to lead off with the NFL, because yesterday, that might have been the best championship Sunday that I've ever seen. Both games go to overtime. Both games were just fantastic. I mean, if you're one of those people that thinks that the NFL is not very good and it's boring and that it's not as good as other sports, it's not as good as college football, it's not, I would just say the games yesterday were just proof of how good the NFL can be when the NFL is on. And yesterday the NFL was on, man. Great players making great plays, and the fine margins in winning and losing both of those games were such that, more so in the AFC Championship game than the NFC Championship game, it felt like there were about 20 different plays that if they go one way or another, if a guy's not offsides, I mean, there's just so many little things that decide who gets to go to the Super Bowl and potentially achieve greatness and who goes home really, really disappointed. Of course, what happened in the NFC? And let's start there. Look, you can't, in any football game, and really this is for any sporting contest, right? It's never about one play. No game is lost or won on one play. Even if we were to look at the NFC champion or the AFC championship game yesterday, and you could point to all those things that happened in the second half, you could always turn around and say, well, if Kansas City had just played better in the first half, they're going to the Super Bowl. Point to the offsides call, point to all of, and it was right, D Ford was offsides. Point to the catches that were either catches or they weren't catches, and all of these very fine margin moments. You know, Kansas City plays better in the first 30 minutes of the game, they're probably going to the Super Bowl. So even when we look at the NFC Championship game, there are a lot of little moments. The Rams fans will point to the face mask call that didn't get called for Jared Goff, and as evidence that, hey, they had some bad calls too. However, that acknowledgement out of the way. I don't know how we can point to a game that is tied and we're in the final 2 minutes of a game. So it's basically 0-0 with 2 minutes to go. The Rams are in a position where they can't really stop the clock. The Saints have the ball. It's third down. And I think the most egregious refereeing call in the history, I think of all sports, I've been thinking about this for almost 24 hours now. I cannot think of a worse non-call situation than that third down call where the Rams defensive back not only goes helmet to helmet with the receiver, but the pass interference was like one of the most blatant pass interference penalties I think I've seen all season long. He wiped a dude out head to head, helmet to helmet. Like clearly before the ball arrives. And look, I kind of feel for the officials. Because if you're an official in the final 2 minutes of an NFC Championship game where the winner's going to the Super Bowl and the loser is going home and just devastated, if at all possible, you want to let the players play it out. So I get it, right? Because we constantly let them decide it on the field. We say that a lot and we mean it. We want the players and not the refs to decide the game. And yet, if you let the players decide it and something so egregious occurs that we all saw with the naked eye, let alone with the slow motion replays and everything else, like, if you see it and you don't call it, then even in letting the players play it out and not throwing your flag, you have decided the outcome of the game, or at least greatly impacted it. And the thing about this call is that if it's called right, if just the pass interference alone is called, because maybe it's easy to miss, oh, I don't know, helmet to helmet. Maybe you miss that. I don't know how you miss both. I don't know how you don't call one or the other, even if you miss one of the two. The Saints would have had the ball, first and goal, less than 2 minutes to go in a game, at essentially the 5-yard line. The Rams almost certainly never get the ball back. The Saints just set they probably run one play, get it to the middle of the field, then they run clock. And then we find ourselves in a situation where all the Saints have to do is kick a field goal that's less than the distance of a point after, because it would have been about a 25-yard field goal, if that, more like 23 yards. An old-school PAT, if you will. The one that's like 99% sure look, they could have missed it. They could have missed it. If a Rams fan wants to sit here and tell me they could have missed it, hey, I feel you. It could have happened. It could have happened. They could have fumbled a snap. All kinds of things that could have happened. They just would have been extremely unlikely. 99 times out of 100 in that situation, Saints run the clock down. They kick the field goal. They go to the Super Bowl. That penalty doesn't get called. It accentuates the fact that Sean Payton did a horrible job of handling that series. Incompletion on first down, stops the clock, runs it on second down, incompletion on third down. They were in a position to basically end that game anyway, and Sean Payton did not do a good job. However, he should have been bailed out by the pass interference or the helmet to helmet, or both. Like, as bad as he handled that, it should not have mattered, because the right call should have been made. And I just thank God I'm not a Saints fan. I thank God that I don't even know. What do you do if you're a Saints fan today? You never get over that. Look, as a Dallas Cowboys fan, it's been 25 years almost since the non-pass interference call on Deion Sanders against Michael Irvin mostly played a huge role in deciding what was the 1994 NFC Championship game, although technically played in January of 1995. Like I said, not quite 25 years. The game's played just like this game's played in 2019. It's for the 2018 season. That was the 1994 season, but played in 1995. The Cowboys make that comeback. They don't get all the way back because when Troy Aikman throws a ball to Michael Irvin and Deion Sanders interferes with Michael Irvin and then intercepts the pass, they didn't call the flag. I have been, of all of the sporting events in my lifetime that I truly care about as a fan, not as a professional, not as someone in this business, as a fan, I've never gotten over that call. The Cowboys were going for a three-peat. They were going for one of the great comebacks in NFL history after falling behind, what was it, 21 to nothing against the 49ers in the first quarter? They come all the way back. And then a non-call, a blatant non-call, partly decides the game. Of course, the thing about that game was that there was still time left on the clock. It played a dramatic role in what the final outcome of that game, but it wasn't even similar. And it wasn't nearly as blatant as this one. This is the worst non-call in the history of sports. And if you're a Saints fan, you're never getting over it, man. Never. And after what happened a year ago, I would have to give serious consideration as a Saints fan for never watching the NFL again. I couldn't take it. It wouldn't be out of protest. It would be out of, this isn't fun. I always say that about, one of the rough things about being a sports fan, like really into sports, I feel like the despair is so much more intense than the elation. I think back to the 2009 Texas Longhorns where they played in a national championship game, and yet that season wasn't fun. That when Texas beat Oklahoma 16-13 in the Cotton Bowl, that was not fun. It was stressful. There was so much pressure, so much on the line that it becomes hard to enjoy the process. Especially when you think that about the context of what it followed from the 2008 season. The Saints just went through that. They fought all the way back after losing the way they lost a year ago to Minnesota. To have that game wrapped up and then to lose the way they lost and then to come all the way back the next year and to be in a position to get to the Super Bowl and put that behind you and then to lose in a... I don't know. It feels worse. I don't know. Despair is despair. It's like on a scale of 1 to 10, how bad was the despair? 11. 11 versus 12. Like, it's awful. And Saints fans will never get over that. Because the Michael Irvin thing, the interference from Deion Sanders, it wasn't nearly that bad. It was bad. But it wasn't nearly that bad. And there was a lot that still happened after that play. This was a situation where if the penalty is called, the Saints literally run the clock out. There's nothing the Rams can do. There's nothing. This is brutal, man. It's brutal. And I'm not going to go so far as to say that there's an asterisk on the Super Bowl, that Super Bowl 53 comes with an asterisk. Like, the game is over. Bad officiating is part of the deal. I think NFL fans will move on. In 2 weeks from now, we'll watch the Patriots and the Rams. I think it's going to be a fantastic game. Whatever happens, happens, and the winner of that game is going to be the champion, and we won't. The 49ers don't have an asterisk on that 94 championship because of that play. And I don't think we'll look back in history, but man, we're never going to forget the play. We're never going to forget how the Saints got screwed on that. And it, in a way, at this point, it defines the entire season. Because and on one hand, you've got one championship game decided by a blown official's call, and the other game's decided by a coin flip. I don't hate the way the NFL does its overtime. I don't know how to do overtime. Maybe you play 15 minutes, and then if it's still tied after 15 minutes, you play another 15 minutes. Like, I don't know. Maybe you play 15 minutes. If there's still a tie, then it's sudden death. I don't know. Like, that actually sounds fair, but oh, if you're a Kansas City Chiefs fan today, you make that comeback, you play so well in the second half, you think about what Patrick Mahomes did in the final, what was it, like 40 seconds of that game to get Kansas City in a position where they could kick the game time field goal, they go to overtime, and Mahomes never gets to step on the field again. You know, one of the things that a Rams fan can point to is say, look, Yes, the call was terrible, and it played a role in the outcome. But the Saints got the ball first. We forced an interception that Drew Brees threw, and then we won the game. That's fair. That's why, you know, I get it. I get it. But it's just a weird, weird, wonderful, fabulous, awful weekend in the NFL. It did this. It did on Sunday what no other sport can do. The NBA cannot give you that in the NBA Finals. They can't. Because nobody's going to watch an Eastern Conference. It's just, there was two games. Both go to overtime. Both will be remembered for all time. I think it goes down as one of the greatest days in the history of the league. Not all for the right reasons. But if P.T. Barnum would say, you know, there's no such thing as bad attention, bad publicity. Well, the NFL, everybody will be, nobody's protesting the Super Bowl in 2 weeks. We're watching it, baby. We're watching that game in part because we know how that game was created. Now, just some generality, some general thoughts on that game coming out of the game. Let's start with the NFC side of things. Jared Goff outplayed Drew Brees in the Superdome in a game that decided who goes to the Super Bowl. I don't know that I thought that was possible. You could have convinced me that the Rams would beat the Saints going into that game. No problem thinking that. I don't know that I would have thought Jared Goff would outplay arguably one of the top five quarterbacks in the history of the sport. And Drew, this was Drew Brees, all-pro level Drew Brees, getting outplayed by Jared Goff. I didn't see that coming. I definitely didn't see that coming with the knowledge that Todd Gurley was basically a non-factor. How the hell did we get to a point where C.J. Anderson is the bell cow running back in L.A. over Todd Gurley? And what does this mean for the Super Bowl? Todd Gurley in November was arguably the NFL MVP. On Sunday, with the Super Bowl on the line, he didn't play, and the Rams still won the game. It's amazing. And I'll tell you who I'm really disappointed for today. I'm disappointed for Malcolm Brown, the former Longhorn, because he should be C.J. Anderson. He was the Rams' backup running back. He was having a really good season as a backup running back. If he doesn't get hurt, Todd Gurley gets injured, and it's Malcolm Brown's show. And instead, he has to watch C.J. Anderson come off the street and take the glory that could have been his. Mindful, he will potentially end up with a Super Bowl ring if the Rams can finish the deal, and he will feel like he played a role in helping the team win a Super Bowl this year. Even if he misses the end of the season, still, I would have loved to have watched Malcolm Brown have that opportunity. The one that C.J. Anderson has had, and that he didn't get it is, you know, is disappointing for me as a guy that roots for Malcolm Brown, because I think that's a good dude. One of my favorite things about Malcolm Brown isn't the career that he had at Texas, just that I think of him as a good dude, which makes me want to root for him. Because there are other Longhorns in the NFL that I don't necessarily think of as awesome people. So I don't really root for them as much as I root for the good dudes. Over on the AFC side of things, how do you not talk about the greatness of Tom Brady? 9 effing Super Bowls. He's almost been as a player to more Super Bowls. I mean, he's been to more Super Bowls than the Dallas Cowboys have been to as a franchise. It's amazing. He goes into this Super Bowl, his 9th, going for his 6th championship. And look, I think Aaron Rodgers is the most incredible quarterback my eyes have ever seen. But resumes matter. And Tom Brady's resume and what he does year in and year out, it's not as flashy. You don't look at him and go, he can do things that Aaron Rodgers can't. Well, he can. He wins. He wins all the time. And it doesn't always show up in a spectacular play. It just shows up over the course of 60 minutes as greatness. he did that in front of Joe Montana. I mean, that's the guy that everybody holds him up to. Montana went to 4 Super Bowls and 4-0 and all. Dude has been to 9. He's been to more. He's had more seasons end in Super Bowls than I think Joe Montana ever was able to stay healthy and play in general. You know, Montana had a history. Durability issues was one of the things that if he didn't have, you wonder what Montana's career might have looked like. He probably plays in more than 4 Super Bowls. He probably wins more than 4 Super Bowls, but he didn't. Tom Brady's been to 9, man. And another guy, another Hall of Fame player that I think last night had a virtuoso moment, Gronk. Rob Gronkowski's had a really difficult season. I think Super Bowl 53 is going to be Rob Gronkowski's last game as a professional football player, which means yesterday was his second to last game, and he made so many big catches, and he did such an important job of blocking and helping protect Brady. If you go back and look at one of those plays in overtime, the first big catch, I think it was a 3rd and 10, 3rd and 11 to Julian Edelman. It was Gronk's chip on the guy covering Edelman, who was in the slot, that allowed for Edelman to have the separation to make that huge play. There was, again, the margins that decide glory versus destitution is so slim. Any number of those plays. Because I think we all think if Mahomes gets the ball back, if the Chiefs get the ball back, they're going to win the game. And the Patriots just never gave them that opportunity. And now you've got Malcolm Brown versus Malcolm Brown. One of the former Longhorn Malcolm Browns is going to get another Super Bowl, get a Super Bowl ring. Malcolm Brown with no L. Or missing one L, right? Malcolm Brown, the running back, has 2 L's in his name. Malcolm Brown, the defensive tackle for the Patriots, has 1. He already has a ring. He'll either get a second, or Malcolm Brown, the running back, will get a first. But it's the Malcolm Brown Bowl, if you will, in Super Bowl 53. I just thought the NFL was fantastic over the weekend. I want more. Give me more. Oh, can I have a game tonight? Those games were so good last night, it almost makes me want to watch the Pro Bowl. Almost. Let's move on to the world of UT sports. Let's start with basketball, because ultimately we're going to get to Matthew McConaughey, and there's like a crossover there. Huge win for the Texas basketball program. I wrote this in my 10 thoughts from the weekend, but when you look at where this basketball team and program is, Saturday night felt like the season was on the line. What were they, 10-7 overall? They were 2-3 in conference play. You lose that game, you go 10-8, you're 2-4, and you're really chasing your tail in terms of getting to 500 in conference play and winning enough games and having a good enough record that you get in as an at-large team in the NCAA tournament. If they lose that game, it's a 4-game losing streak. They're barely 500 in overall play, and they're 2 games under in conference play, and instead they win the game against, I thought Oklahoma was really impressive. Like, they had a really bad first half, and in the second half, it was like, okay, this is why this team is ranked. I thought Oklahoma was impressive. I thought it was a really good college basketball game, and give the Longhorns credit, man, because for one night, and who knows, look, they got TCU this week. They play Georgia this week. They really need to win both of those games. Who knows? They could lose both. Both of those games are on the road. So I'm having this talk on the podcast right now. They're sitting at 11-7. They could be 11-9 in a week from now, and the conversation will sound completely different. That's where this basketball program is, man. It is living game to game. It has no, it has very little room. I won't say it has no room. It has very little room in terms of like margin for error. They've given that up. They've got some bad losses. They've got missed opportunities. And yet the seniors stepped up. And yet in a late, they made big shots late. And they won a close game, which is all of those things together have been things that haven't been happening with regularity. I'm not going to say if they can keep doing that, they'll, everything will be okay, because we know they won't. We know. We have a large enough sample size to know You don't get that Kerwin Roach every night. You don't get... You don't get that from... There's no consistency with any of these players on this team. That is, for me, 4 years into Shaka Smart's reign as Texas basketball coach, that's the thing that's the most alarming. There's nothing with this team other than its defense that you can take to the bank. Jace Fabris hitting... He had been such a... Like, there's just so much about that game that was... that you'd be critical about in a loss, and yet they win the game, and I think you have to tip your cap to them. And look, Texas bat, look, it's okay. Here's the thing that I would stress to Texas fans today. It's okay to tip your cap and enjoy a win over Oklahoma like that. It doesn't change the season. It doesn't mean that this team's not any more on the ropes in terms of trying to accomplish anything this season. But sometimes you have to enjoy just a good performance in a vacuum. It was a good win. It was a good win. It was good to see Ositowski, you know, play well on a night. It almost felt like it was weird. The seniors played so well in that game compared to what you see from them night in and night out. It almost felt like a senior night. It almost felt like, man, that should be the last time they ever play in the Irwin Center, because it ain't going to happen again. At least it feels that way. Of course, the thing that everybody will probably remember about that game a decade from now, and I think in a decade from now, we will remember that game, but not because of anything that any of the players did. Matthew McConaughey, the Minister of Culture, in his burnt orange pimp suit. He's something else. And there will be, I would imagine, a lot of Texas fans showed up today at work, if they had to work, right? It's Martin Luther King Day, and just shout out to the fact that it's a holiday, and we should all take a little bit of time to read a little bit. Read something more about MLK than just the I Have a Dream speech, because the substance that's there, the words, the stories, the history that's there, it's bigger than that. He's bigger than that. And I think sometimes we focus a little too much on just that I Have a Dream speech, because it is does not tell a full story. Anyway, Matthew McConaughey, well, when you go to work, I lost my train of thought there for a second. When you go to work on Tuesday, or whenever you go to work, or just when you talk with your friends, they're going to hate what was going on with McConaughey on Saturday. They're going to say it was cheesy. They're going to say he's lame. They're going to say all of these things. And you know why they're saying them? Because they don't have a Matthew McConaughey at their school. It's as simple as that. I'm watching Saturday and wondering to myself, why has this not happened earlier? Matthew McConaughey has loved Texas athletics. He's loved Texas football. He's loved Texas basketball for decades. We know he shows up on certain days to give speeches to the football team. However, this was something different. This was a calculated exercise to both promote and recruit and to lift up in any way possible the programs that he supports. Look, he's a booster now, but he also has an official title with the school that probably allows him to get around this booster thing. And the kids loved it. The basketball players loved it. He sat on the bench, and I thought, that's kind of strange. But what does it matter what I think? The kids loved it. The players loved it. The recruits loved it. Recruits' moms definitely loved it. That's why I say you should. Back when Matthew was still the sexiest, people's sexiest man on earth, like, that's when it would have been a good idea to have him there for recruiting visits. Every mom gets time with Matthew. I don't have a problem with it. I think in recruiting, as long as you're not paying the kids, as long as you're not doing anything illegal, and this isn't illegal, otherwise it wouldn't be done in broad daylight. I think everything's fair. And when we talk about what happened with the Texas football team, you know, it wasn't a big weekend for official visitors. It was a big weekend for unofficial visitors from the 2020 class. Look, we've talked about how critical it is. And having McConaughey there is the type of thing that when those kids go back to school, the selfies with McConaughey are the things that those kids will remember. It'll be the selfies with McConaughey that'll be the things they talk about with their friends. You met McConaughey? What's he like? Oh, let me show you my selfie. Like, it's a small thing, but it's a big thing. And if Texas can make that happen with any kind of regularity, hey, as long as he still has the Q rating that he carries today, as long as he's still doing commercials, as long as he's still an A-list actor, if you can get him on your campus to trot out in front of recruits, like, why wouldn't you do that? And we see USC do it all the time with their supporters. Hey, look, there's Will Ferrell. Hey, look, there's Snoop Dogg. Hey, look, whomever. Like, Texas really has won. But, man, they used the shit out of him this weekend. And I think it worked with flying colors. And the other thing that comes out of this weekend that people are talking about is, you know, Texas A&M has a commitment from a kid who's one of the best players in the state. Damon Demas is a kid who's arguably, he's one of the best players in the state. He 5-star upside when it's all said and done. And he's committed to Texas A&M, but he's roughly visited Texas 500 times since he committed to A&M. This weekend, it feels like there was a line in the moment, a line in the sand moment in his recruitment. There's been a lot of discussion about this, but look, and I wrote about this in my 10 thoughts, but Tom Herman's goal when he gets in front of elite recruits like he was in front of them on Saturday, get your message across. And Tom Herman's message is simple. You can win a national championship at Texas. You don't have to go to the SEC to compete for a national championship. We just kicked an SEC team's ass and it was year two. That's the message. You don't have to leave the state. You do not have to leave the Big 12. You can do everything that you need to do here. Screw the SEC. And look, if that's his message, then get it out. And if a prospect who's committed to A&M hears that and he's in front of it and he's like, oh, he's talking bad about me, then you probably shouldn't be visiting Texas. That's probably a sign that you should stick with your commitment to A&M. If it offends you that when the University of Texas is selling the things related to the University of Texas and pointing out the ass kicking on January 1st and how it applies to the future, like, look, man, Tom Herman's got to do what Tom Herman's got to do. And if kids take offense to things that Tom Herman says, then stop visiting Tom Herman's program. Because I would tell Tom Herman, don't stop. It resonated with kids that heard it that weren't committed to A&M. It wasn't like they all went, oh my God, did you hear what Tom Herman said? That was so, one guy took offense. And if he's going to take offense, like, there's a moral to that story. And I just think if you're Texas, you got to keep hammering home your bullet points every single time. If Demas shows up again, same points get hammered home. Stop visiting us if you don't like our messaging. Because I don't believe, and here's the thing. I feel this way about all schools. Oh man, when Texas fans get all bitchy, oh, schools are negative recruiting against us. And there's, because you know, it's tried and true. You know what Texas A&M coaches will say to kids who are looking at University of Texas? They'll be like, I'll never forget this. Jamie Hightower is a perfect example. He was a kid, an offensive lineman way back in the day, 5-star kid, was looking at Texas A&M. And one of the things that they would tell Jamie Hightower way back in the day is, don't go to Texas. Oh, the city of Austin will chew you up and spit you out. It's Satan's paradise. Go down on 6th Street and see what happens to you. And that's not negative recruiting. Do you know what that's called? Recruiting. That's what it's called. What do you call negative recruiting? Recruiting. You say what you have to say. You do what you have to say, all within the limits of legality. And there's no honor among thieves. This is what it looks like. This is how the sausage is made. And if you're a college football fan and you get turned off by this idea that schools are negatively recruiting, then you probably shouldn't follow recruiting because it gets dirtier. Which brings us to the conversation of the footwork king. Now, look, what I'm about to say, I'm going to speak about in very general generalities. General generalities. Because I don't have the facts. I don't have receipts. Whatever might be alleged of the footwork king or anyone else, man, I have not done I've not done the legwork where I can specifically say this happened. This happened and he did it. And I don't know. So what I'm going to speak about in generalities is what I think about in terms of what's being accused. Now, this isn't new, but the alleged hustle for some of these trainers is that you don't charge the elite kids because you want the access. So if it's a 5-star guy, if it's a highly rated 4-star guy, if it's a guy that's very notable, you just want that guy to be around you. The money, the charges, the career is made up in the guppies, not the sharks. The sharks are going to get scholarships without you. They don't really need your help. They could use your transportation. They could use some guidance. But they don't need you. See, it's the lower rated guys. It's the guys without hopes. It's the guys who have dreams, but put their head on pillows at night and know that it's unlikely that those dreams will ever be realized. Those are the kids that pay huge sums of money, oftentimes, to these advisors, these trainers. And here's the hustle, right? Like, it's not against the rules to train a kid and charge him money for it. Like, that's a business. Training a kid and potentially having influence, like, hey, I know colleges, I can get the word out. Like, there's nothing wrong in that. Footwork King or anybody else. If Footwork King is training kids and he's like, well, look, man, I'm going down to Baylor this weekend. I'm going to go watch the Baylor TCU game and I'll have some time with the coaches. I'm going to put in a good word for you. Nothing wrong with that. Like that. In theory, is why you would want to be around Footwork King or any of these other trainers. Anybody who has influence, anybody who has friends and contacts, like that's networking is what that is. The issue is, and some of the allegations that are being made, is that the hustle works like this. I train you and there's a cost for that. However, I can get you a preferred walk-on spot. I will make it happen. Pay me whatever the amount of money is. I will place the call. I will execute what needs to be executed, and you will get a preferred walk-on spot for whatever amount of cash that is. That's a hustle. That is a hustle. And if you can't understand the implications of what that is, it's access for sale. And I'm going to check with Texas compliance and the NCAA this week to find out what the real rules are for this. But under no circumstances with a state university, like, I don't know what it's like. Maybe it's different at a private school. I know that Bill Powers got into trouble that the Board of Regents, some of them lost their minds because they thought Powers was getting preferential. He was giving preferential treatment to friends of the school who wouldn't otherwise get into the school. He was using his influence to get kids in. That's a no-no. Some Board of Regents lost their minds over it. So The issue here is that you have something of value. What is a preferred walk-on spot? Well, yes, you get meals, and yes, access to tutors, but more than anything else, it gets you a guaranteed spot on the roster. A preferred walk-on is guaranteed a spot on the 105-man roster. Doesn't mean he gets paid or played. Freudian slip there. It means that he's guaranteed a spot that he doesn't have to work out for. A normal walk-on does tryouts and has to earn his way onto the team. A preferred walk-on gets to skip the tryouts. It's a guaranteed spot on the roster. You get your name in the media guide. Your name shows up on the official website. You are on the team. And if the hustle is, let's just use Baylor as an example with these mythical names and mythical situations that we're talking about. If a person were to say, tell a student athlete, look, I know you want to go to Baylor. I know that you want to play on the Baylor football team. I know they're not giving you the time of day. Give me $10,000 and all of that can change. I will make it happen. Then presumably what has to happen is that person would have to call Baylor head football coach, Matt Rhule, and say, Matt, I've got a guy. I need you to take him. Well, we don't even know who this kid is, or we do know who this kid is, but we're really not interested. We need to save one of these spots. And no, I need you to take him. Well, and if you take him, look, I'm going to bring the rest of my kids down to a game this week. If you take him, I'll make sure my kids, the high profile guys that you really want, I'll make sure they're there. And if a coach is like, if Matt Rhule says, okay, I will give this kid a preferred walk-on spot so that you can collect $10,000 so that you later on will make sure that you bring kids that you won't otherwise bring. It's part extortion, part hustle, part fraud, part all kinds of things. And if you can't understand why the slippery slope here, then you don't want to, because once a coach, any coach, Matt Rhule, Jimbo Fisher, Tom Herman, anybody, once anybody says, okay, I will give this kid a spot on the roster and all that comes with it so that you can accept that $10,000, that's when it becomes a real problem. That's when you're an accessory to the crime. That's where I'm guessing that Baylor compliance or A&M compliance or Texas compliance would lose their shit if they found out that that was actually happening. And it does happen. It is happening. And if you're one of these coaches that has relationships with people who are pulling this kind of stunt, like this is the kind of thing that feds would be interested in. There are all kinds of ethical considerations here that are very problematic. And the least of which probably the financial records of said person who's charging this kind of stuff and taking cash under the table. You can't be an accessory to that. So look, man, I'm not speaking about anybody specifically. I'm not calling anybody a bad guy. I don't know enough legitimate specifics to have an opinion on if somebody is out of line or not. But if we're talking about these situations that are being alleged in general, it's a problem. And to me, it's the kind of problem that could lead to really big problems. Really big. You know, the issue with Will Lyles back in the day was that nobody could ever quite put their finger on what he was getting out of it. And then we found out that schools were buying his recruiting packages and that they were paying 25 grand or whatever the number was for his recruiting service. And then, you know, the hustle then was that he would give you the access to the kids, but you were really paying money for his service. And the other things, that was just stuff that happened. You know, school, I remember Oregon, if I'm not mistaken, paid for access to Will Lyles' recruiting service. And then they just happened to get kids that would show up and visit and stuff like that. And then you enter this gray area where in the name of almost this shell company, although look, Maybe it's legitimate. Like, maybe there's a legitimate recruiting service. The way I remembered the way that went down, it wasn't exactly what I see from legitimate recruiting services in terms of the depth and the volume of what you actually get. It felt, I'm not saying it was, it felt like a shell company. That was just the header for how the hustle works. In this particular situation, it doesn't sound like there's a recruiting service to pay money to. If Tom Herman wants to do business, or any other coach wants to do business with any particular trainer, and all he is a trainer, like, I don't know how you help that guy out. It's what Will Lyles had was brilliant in a lot of ways. He created a legal system of how he could be paid specifically by the schools. That's not what this is. The allegation that exists out there is that there's a hustle that involves a non-recruiting service entity charging money to guarantee a preferred walk-on spot. And that if that preferred walk-on spot is secured, it's because they facilitated the move for it to occur. It is so against the rules. I can't tell you how against the rules that is. Because it's pay for access. And there's actually a tangible thing. There's a value placed on it. There's a value to being on the team and not having to try out for it. There's a value to the tutoring. There's a value to the meals. There's a value to those things. So I think this situation is going to blow up. I think that all of the coaches that have relationships with people who are alleged to have been involved in these types of things, man, you better make sure that there are no receipts. You better make sure that when push comes to shove, your compliance office cannot connect the dots to you and anything that this guy has hustled, or this imaginary person might have hustled out of a young man, if a hustle has even occurred. It's just allegations. But the allegations should not be looked at and, oh, well, a shrug of the shoulder. It's a big deal. It's a big deal. And I guarantee you, if Tom Herman or Jimbo Fisher or Matt Rhule or anybody, if any head coach, Nick Saban, if you were to ask any of those coaches on the record about this, I guarantee you they would deny A, that it happens, and B, any involvement. And it better not happen, and there better not be any involvement. And if you're doing business, if you have relationships, look, you know, mom and dads always say, hang out with dirty people, you're going to get dirt on yourself in some shape or fashion. Like, that's the speech, right? You hang out with a seedy crowd, you put yourself into a position to be connected to seedy developments. I think that's what's on the table here. And I think, in very short order, I think this is going to come to a head. And I think that all of these schools involved are going to have to be very careful with how they handle this moving forward and how they've handled it going backwards. Anyway, look, I'm looking at the clock. We've already done a very healthy podcast. We'll continue all of this discussion. I'm sure we'll talk about it in the Ticket City podcast later in the week. I'm sure Jason and Anwar and the rest of the guys doing podcasts here on the Yak will talk about it in their podcast. The conversation will continue. For now, I bid you farewell. You guys have a great week. Enjoy your Monday. Later.